an exposition of the Revelation in the view of Reformed premillennial historicism for the 21st century by Nicholas Arthur. Chapter 12, The Woman and the Dragon, verse 1. And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. And she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth, and pain to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and 7 crowns upon his heads. And his tail drew a third part of the stars of heaven, and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she brought forth a man-child, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. And there was a war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels, and prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, Now is come salvation and strength, and the kingdom of our God, and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death. Therefore rejoice, ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knoweth that he hath but a short time. And when the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. And to the woman were given 2 wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time, and times, and half a time, from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth, and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And the dragon was wroth with the woman, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God, and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Here we have the first of 3 chapters with supplemental visions for explanation, identification of participants, and circumstance during the chronological 7 seals, 7 trumpets, and 7 vials of the sequential visions. And now a new vision opens, given a supplementary explanation of the beast from the abyss, and retracing the history of the same remarkable period of a time, times and half a time, or 42 months, or 1260 days, noted as that anti-Christian apostate church treading down the holy city, of the witnesses prophesying in sackcloth, and of the woman's remaining a refugee in the wilderness. Also of the little horn of Daniel's 4th beast, and of the beast from the abyss carrying the 7-headed dragon's delegated authority. Such retrogressive explanations are common with historians, who, after describing the events of a period of time with reference chiefly to secular matters or foreign politics, often retrace their steps to give the ecclesiastical or domestic history of the same period. It is supposed that this supplemental vision, contained in the 12th, 13th, and 14th chapters, was written on the outside of the scroll of the Revelation, chronologically parallel with the other visions inside. The woman represents Christ's true church on earth, the mother of those that keep the commandments of God and the testimony of Jesus Christ, and arrayed with the sun, moon, and stars as symbolizing her political power and ecclesiastical dignity at the particular epoch prefigured, and as Zion described in Isaiah 66:8-9, as travailing to bring forth a man-child representing a nation. So the church is at this crisis symbolized as about to bring forth a man-child representing a Christian polity about to be raised to dominant power. At the same time, there appeared in the heaven of the political world a great red dragon, the symbol in the 3rd century of the pagan Roman power. His 7 heads, like those of the succeeding beasts from the sea and the abyss, thought to signify the 7 hills of Rome, the capital city of the beast power. The use of the diadem instead of the laurel crown further indicates the precise epoch, as also the circumstance of the diadems still resting on the 7 heads, and not, as afterwards, upon the 10 horns or kingdoms issuing from them. A further mark of the first time when these events were to occur is seen in the limit put to the extent of authority possessed by the dragon. Namely, when the pagan Roman power should be reduced to 1/3 of the empire, as was the case just before the victories of Constantine, when the empire was divided among 3 emperors, see the 1st trumpet and also the 6th seal. While in 2 of the portions the Christians enjoyed recognition and support, in the Asiatic 3rd they were exposed to the bitter and cruel persecution from the pagan Emperor Maximin, who did all in his power to destroy the Christian name and rising power. On his death, the Christian body, headed and represented by Constantine, was speedily elevated to dignity and power, and after a subsequent desperate struggle with the apostate Licinius, in which the invisible powers of good and evil appeared, striving for the mastery, paganism, under cover of which Satan opposed the truth, was finally cast down and deposed from the governance of affairs, and Constantine, the son of the church, as the Christian emperors were henceforward styled, was raised to an avowedly Christian throne, and constituted sole master of a nominally Christian empire, under which the pagans, in their turn, were ruled with a rod of iron. In a picture elevated by Constantine over his palace gate, he was represented with the cross of salvation above his head, and beneath, his enemy and that of the church, under the semblance of a dragon, precipitated into the abyss. The Christians, formerly depressed and persecuted, now greeted each other with songs of congratulation, celebrated the deeds of those martyred during the persecution, and anticipated the reign of Christ upon earth, which they imagined to be then begun. But these rejoicings were premature, and quickly followed by a note of warning that the devil, having failed in destroying Christianity by means of paganism, would use other and more effectual means to injure and persecute the church. The association of the true faithful church with the splendors and honors of this world was indeed but short-lived. The Arian heresy, which denied the divinity of Jesus, attacked her on one side, superstition, formalism, and remaining paganism on the other. The faithful remnant remained in obscurity, as before depicted in the 2 parallel visions of the separation of the sealed from the unsealed, and of those that adhered to Jesus as their only mediator and atonement from out of the apostatized multitudes of the professing visible church. But before the complete seclusion of the church in the wilderness, the Emperor Theodosius the Great, who alone reunited the two wings, or eastern and western divisions, of the great Roman eagle, exerted his imperial power as a protector and nursing father of the true church. Against paganism, he was an enemy so determined and powerful that it henceforth never again raised its head. Against Arianism, he was equally decided, whilst for 18 years his great name formed a barrier to protect the church and the empire from the tremendous and already imminent eruption of the Gothic flood. Foiled in the object of his persecution of the church from within the empire, Satan now made another attempt to overwhelm it from without by an invading flood of Arian and pagan Gothic nations. The fury of the flood was such as to sweep away all vestiges of Roman political authority, and might thus have well been deemed sufficient to overthrow the Christian church also. But the true faith, however earthly and overlaid with superstition it might have become, had been so ingrained into the national mind, habits, and institutions that to sweep away Christianity, it needed to sweep away the entire population of the empire. This was contrary to the policy and beyond the power of the barbarian conquerors, who, being thinned in number by their bloody wars, were themselves absorbed and incorporated into the Roman population, and relinquished their pagan and Arian errors in favor of the Orthodox belief. The earth thus far helped the woman, and swallowed up the flood, though amidst abounding corruption, the true and faithful witnesses of God remained hidden and almost invisible, while the devil, the animating spirit of the old paganism, proceeded in wrath to plot for their destruction by rearing an anti-Christian hierarchy out of Christendom itself. The dragon and the beast as like symbols. Many expositors claim to interpret Scripture by Scripture, and it is true that Scripture should be interpreted by Scripture. Apocalyptic terms and symbols should be defined by Scripture explicitly with one or two witnesses. Interpretation by conjecture should always be suspect and never relied upon for a definite determination or to become dogmatic. We should always look first in the immediate text, the same chapter, or the same book, before we look elsewhere in the Scripture. Similar texts are available in the prophecies of Daniel, so it would be the next resource for divine interpretation of symbols. As well, there are many prophetic texts scattered throughout the Old and New Testaments. Divine interpretation refers to those apocalyptic terms and symbols which are interpreted explicitly in the text of Scripture itself. Every expositor should start at this point with that which is sure, which interpretations God has given to us in the text of the prophecy itself. Therefore, before moving on, we must determine exactly what the following symbols represent in the subsequent chapters of the Revelation. The beast symbol. The word beast is used as an apocalyptic symbol 6 times in Daniel chapter 7, then found 37 times in the Revelation chapters 11 through 20. This is a very important symbol to understanding the Revelation. Daniel 7 describes 4 great beasts came up from the sea with different characteristics, the fourth of which had 10 horns. We have determined to be the same power that is described severally in the Revelation, also as having 10 horns. Whereas John has not interpreted this symbol to us in the text, Daniel explicitly defines the symbol for us. Daniel 7:23. Thus said he, "The fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth. Now we know, when we see the word beast being used symbolically, that we are talking about a prominent kingdom or ruling power in the earth. It would be a mistake to apply the term to a singular individual when the term is used apocalyptically. Also ask, in what way the fourth beast was diverse? The text does not tell us, but we later learn that it had seven heads. The scripture explicitly names four of the beast's powers thus. Daniel 7 opens, in the first year of Belshazzar, the king of Babylon, with the revelation of four beast powers being introduced: Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. Chapter 8 opens, in the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar. In this chapter, the symbol beast is not explicitly used, but two of the kingdoms explicitly named are rather described as different beasts, or animals, if you prefer. The ram, which thou sawest, having two horns, are the kings of Media and Persia, and the rough goat is the king of Grecia, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. Daniel 8, 20 and 21. For confirmation of our thesis here, we also refer to Daniel chapter 2, which outlines the same four dominating powers as those referenced as the beasts of chapter 7 and 8, which reign until Christ sets up his kingdom, however exposed as successive parts of the same image instead, which is also followed by an even more succinct divine interpretation in the text itself. Daniel 2, 38-35. Thou, Babylon, art this head of gold, and after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, forasmuch as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things. And as iron that breaketh all these, it shall break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, forasmuch as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom, which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Forasmuch as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it brake in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Head symbol upon a beast. Where do the four heads of the Daniel 6 leopard fit into our apocalyptic chronology? First, we must ask, does the symbolic use of head in Daniel 7:6 have the same meaning as the usage in the Revelation? It is obvious that more than one head or horn represents a division of power within a beast. The Daniel 7:6 beast is identified as Grecia when recapitulated in chapter 8, where in its final form it had a fourfold division represented by the four horns after its single horn is broken off of its single head. Therefore, the four heads of chapter 7 merely represent the same division as do the horns in chapter 8. These heads and horns should not be extended to the divisions expressed in the Revelation. as they would only create irreconcilable combinations in the different contexts, to wit, if Rome is number 6, is contemporary with John, as 5 have fallen, and the leopard beast representing Greece has 4 heads, Rome following would be 5, and if you add Babylon and Medo-Persia, Rome would be 7. The only logical conclusion is that the heads of Daniel 7, 6 do not represent the same divisions as those of Revelation 17. Horn symbol upon a beast. Daniel 8:20 also gives us some insight into the horn symbol as an attribute when they appear on a beast power. We notice that the ram which thou sawest having 2 horns are the kings of Media and Persia, indicate an obvious division of power within a beast. In verse 21, and the rough goat is the king of Grecia, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king, indicates the singular power of Alexander the Great when Greece conquered and assimilated the 2 sea beast powers, Babylon and Medo-Persia, that fell before it. In the next verse, now that being broken, whereas 4 stood up for it, 4 kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power, Daniel 8:22, indicates that when Alexander suddenly died, Greece was divided between 4 of his generals. This is the famous and well-known history that followed the prophecy. We notice that the 4th beast of Daniel 7, the dragon of Revelation 12, and the sea beast of Revelation 13 all have 10 horns. By all of the commonalities present, it is reliably held that these are all one and the same beast powers as it appears at different intervals in history. The 7 heads being omitted from the Daniel description may be an indicator of this thesis, or, depending on the meaning attached to the apocalyptic heads, it may be nothing other than a simple omission. Crown symbol upon a beast. Revelation 12:3, and there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and 7 crowns upon his heads. At the time of the fall of pagan Rome, here represented by the 10-horned beast appearing as a red dragon, was celebrated in Roman history when Christianity was elevated to the state religion by the coinage impressed with the state standard over the dragon by Constantine. The 10 horns representing the division of the kingdom upon the invasion of the barbarous nations from the north, we have the testimony of Irenaeus from the 2nd century that this was the understanding of the prophecy even before it happened. I have observed on the apostle's statement that the Thessalonian Christians knew what the hindrance was that prevented the development of this man of sin. And we have the consenting testimony of the early fathers, from Irenaeus, the disciple of St. John, down to Chrysostom and Jerome, to the effect that it was understood to be the imperial power ruling and residing at Rome. The crowns being upon the heads of the beast, rather than on the horn divisions, indicates that the power was centralized in Rome, concurrent with the 1260 years of papal, man of sin, dominancy. This would concur with the little horn of Daniel, where 3 of the 10 horns were broken off, also leaving the remaining horns vested in the little horn power. Revelation 13:1, and I stood upon the sand of the sea, and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. Following the 1260-year overt papal reign of Western Europe, the crowns moved to the several divisions represented by the 10 horns. But papal Rome retains its anti-Christian status and religious power represented by upon his heads the name of blasphemy, This is the present condition of Western Europe in apocalyptic terms, so that it can assume its final revealed status before the consummation, which requires its affiliation with the two-horned earth beast and the image it creates, as outlined in chapter 13. You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Hi, I'm Nicholas Arthur, and I'd like to introduce you to my latest book, Reformed Prophecy Interpretation, an apology for Reformed premillennial historicism in the 21st century. As with primitive biblical Christianity, historicism is the method of prophecy interpretation restored with the advent of the Protestant Reformation, and had become so widely held that for a long time it was called the Protestant view. My book is not so much about the errors of dispensationalism or amillennialism. Rather, it is about the historicist alternative to understanding many of the same passages from the vantage point of prophecy fulfilled in history. For those that desire more than mere hypotheses, bolstered with conjectured speculation, those who require explicit biblical exegesis and verified historical fulfillment, and are not willing to accept speculation as anything other than what it is, speculation, not truth. This book is for you. Over the last century, this method of interpretation has become almost completely forgotten, even by Protestants, in the face of a method that is based almost entirely on future speculation, rather than fulfilled prophecy in history. In my book, I examine the reasons for this and investigate some of the prophecy which has been fulfilled in the interim, as well as present an apology for Reformed premillennial historicism to the 21st century. If you're interested in a copy of my book, you can go to my website, crosstheborder.org, and get more information there. Or you may also find it at Amazon. An exposition of the Revelation in the view of Reformed premillennial historicism for the 21st century by Nicholas Arthur. Chapter 13, The Sea Beast, Earth Beast, Image and Mark. Verse 1, And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power, and his seat, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies. And power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, and his tabernacle, and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints, and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell on the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Manifestations of the Roman Beast. The opening verses, as supplemental, contain more than adequate recapitulation for identification and note several changes for the era opening. Then follows verses 11 through 17, an overview of the final phase in the life, machinations, and affiliations of the greatest and most enduring of the final world-dominating powers, or beasts, a government created by mortal man, with its revived head and supporting companions, the earth beast and its image, before it goes to perdition. First manifestation, 7th century BC through 6th century AD. Here we identify the fourth beast of Daniel 7:7, noting the attributes, lion, bear, and leopard, of the three sea beasts which it conquered and assimilated in succession, so identified as the Roman Empire, pagan in its first manifestation, which lasted about 1,200 years, until the empirical rule was taken out of the way to make way for the rise of the man of sin with his great apostasy. Second manifestation, 6th through the 18th century AD. The 10 kingdoms into which the Roman Empire then divided was consistent with the division corresponding to the 10 toes of Daniel's image. The principal Gothic tribes raised into sovereignties were 1. The Anglo-Saxons in Britain, 2. The Franks in central France, 3. The Alemanni on the Rhine, 4. The Burgundians in Burgundy, southeastern France and part of Switzerland, 5. The Visigoths in Spain, 6. The Suevi in Portugal and Gallica, 7. The Vandals in Africa and the Italian islands of Sicily, Sardinia, and Corsica, 8. The Bavarians on the Danube, 9. The Heruli, succeeded by the Ostrogoths in Italy, 10. The Lombards in Lombardy. These kingdoms all acknowledged the papal supremacy, 3 being immediately plucked up and supplanted by the Little Horn of Daniel, Clovis, king of the Franks, submitting about 496 AD, the rest capitulating by 600 AD. Thus the crowns remained upon the 7 heads throughout both the pagan empirical and the papal 1260-year rule. Third, 18th century AD to consummation. This final manifestation is signified first by the placement of the crowns upon the 10 horns. Second, while having upon its heads the name of blasphemy, signifying the anti-Christian power from which the crowns have been removed to the horns. Thus we understand the changes here to represent from the end of the 1260-year overt papal rule of the empire and the beginning of the final era, it having received the purported deadly wound by the sword, until the second advent of Christ. We learn later that the 10 horns will finally turn on the whore of the 7 hills and desolate her. Verse 9. If any man have an ear, let him hear. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and faith of the saints. Here's a demand of attention to what is here discovered of the great sufferings and troubles of the church, and an assurance given that when God has accomplished his work on Mount Zion, his refining work, then he will turn his hand against the enemies of his people, and those who have killed with the sword shall themselves fall by the sword, and those who led the people of God into captivity shall themselves be made captives. Here now is that which will be proper exercise for the patience and faith of the saints, patience under the prospect of such great sufferings, and faith in the prospect of so glorious a deliverance. Rise of the two-horned earth beast. Verse 11. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. And he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he doth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast, which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might be able to buy or sell, save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Here we have the seventh and final beast power enumerated in the Scripture. Let us examine the mentioned attributes of this seventh beast power from the divine text itself and see if we can find a candidate in subsequent history that satisfies all of the criteria following. First, let us refer to Revelation 17:9-11 and the attributes which there help identify this new seventh king beast, revealed here as the earth beast. 1. He is not yet come. Here is a direct future tense reference to an appearance of a seventh beast power that did not previously exist. Future from the present tense of John receiving the revelation, and future from the one is, the Roman beast then in existence. Revelation 13 has the only mention of the appearance of an additional and subsequent beast power in the Scripture, so of necessity must be the same beast power mentioned in both texts. 2. When he cometh, he must continue a short space. Still directing us to the future tense, the author asserts the continuance of this beast power must be relatively short in comparison to the other beast powers before it, or at least the one immediately preceding and contemporary with it, of which the latter seems to be the case. We now turn back to our primary text above, Revelation 13:11-14. 3. This beast comes up out of the earth. First, we notice that this beast does not rise up out of the sea as did the four previous beast powers, the sea, waters, or flood, each respectively indicating multitudes or a densely populated area, such as the old world, and conquest by warfare or the sword. This earth beast would rise up without conquest of the beast preceding it, nor would it occupy the highly populated locality of the preceding sea beast powers. There is only one symbolic use of the word earth that I could find in the Revelation, and that concerning the church's flight into the wilderness. This would seem to confirm the understanding that it refers to the opposite definition than that of the sea symbol, that this beast did not rise up in the old world locality where the sea beast did, but rather would appear from a locality which was sparsely populated upon its rise. 4. He had two horns like a lamb. For reference, averting our attention to the division of the Greek Empire, with its singular horn being broke off and supplanted by four horns, signifying a new fourfold division, and the ten horns of the concurrent sea beasts, three being plucked up before the little horn, etc., we expect to see something representing a twofold division of power during the continuance of this earth beast, as demonstrated by the short history of the Medo-Persian power. Its being described as like a lamb is a probable indicator of the attribute of one of those horns, or divisions of power, and the other indicated by our next attribute. 5. He spake as a dragon. This dragon influence or division would be concurrent through the life of this beast with the two horns, as we notice no change, or one horn being plucked up by another, as in the Grecian and Roman Empire beasts previous to it, or the Medo-Persian, where one horn is higher than the other. This beast may exhibit an equilibrium, or even a constant power struggle between its lamb-like qualities and dragon-like conversation, something similar to the old cartoon caricature with a devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other, especially in its support of the sea beast, which derives its power from the dragon or Satan, the god of this world. 6. He exercises all the power of the first beast before him. In its history, the Roman Empire ruled the then known world and all of its civilizations. It had military outposts in many of those nations. It was the police power of the world. This is the kind of power that will be necessary to fulfill the following tasks, 7 through 14, set forth in the vision for this earth beast power. Number 7, causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast. This is an overview of the end result and motivation of this horn division in the following actions, or, in the biblical sense, its dragon conversation. He uses the following feats to accomplish world obedience to the first beast. 8. Doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. In the context, as in the Roman, this power is military, an overwhelming military power, and contemporarily, this means firepower, a power used to bend the nations to its will. 9. Deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast. Here we continue our theme of an overwhelming military power that would seem miraculous by any historical standard, and the exhibition of such power in the locality of, or in the sight of the beast, the sea beast. 10. Saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast. So much so this power that the entire earth will easily capitulate to the assembly of the image of the beast and eventual worldwide obedience to it. 11. He had power to give life unto the image of the beast. The end result, the wonder, power, and miraculous machinations of this earth beast lead to the next step of worship or obedience to the image of the beast that was and is not and yet is, which will vicariously rule the world through the construct of this image. 12. And cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. Indicating that this second beast dragon speech or horn division of power must be a primary motivator behind the enforcement action of the image it instigates, which enforcement action extends to the following attribute in such action. 13. And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark, that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark, the imposition of which we will discuss in a following section. The identity of the earth beast prefigured in the vision. We now look to recent history, a history which follows all of the expositors whose shoulders we have so far stood upon. A future they could not see, and it seems so obvious, so wonderfully fulfilled, that only one candidate among the prominent powers of the world stands out immediately as fulfilling every criteria of this two-horned earth beast in every detail prefigured in the apocalyptic vision. Here we expound upon them one point at a time. 1. America had not yet come at the reception of the revelation by John. The new world where this power appeared was an unknown, upon the punishment and wounding, as it were to death, of that head of the sea beast, a dominion that lasted for 1260 years under that head, the papal power and its Holy Roman Empire seemed to disappear, was and is not. By 1870, it seemed only a powerless shadow of it remained. 2. America rises in the New World about the same time of the wounding of the Roman papal head, and has now existed a little more than 200 years in its current constitutional established form. How much time can this beast power continue before it exceeds the short space qualification? Exactly what is a short space in context of the prophecy? Even if Christ were not to appear for several hundred years more, America's time would still be a short space in comparison to its contemporary, the sea beast. 3. America comes up out of the earth rather than the sea, representing peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues, where the four previous beast powers rose up. This beast rises out of the new world, a sparsely populated wilderness by comparison. There is no conquest or necessity of assimilation, as noted in the previous consecutive sea beast powers, so that this power can come alongside of and support the sea beast as predicted. 4. He had two horns like a lamb, and 5, he spake as a dragon. When a tenth part of the papal kingdom fell, which tenth we have identified as the falling away of Protestant England from the papal states, many had been fleeing to the New World to escape religious persecution and papal inquisition in the same place where Protestant England eventually established 13 colonies. Canada to the north was a crown colony of the sovereign city of London. Mexico down through all of South America, Latin America, was conquered on behalf of the Vatican by the papal vassals of Portugal and Spanish conquistadors. These are all primarily Roman Catholic. In the New World, the only power that rose up and in time came to exhibit all of the attributes of the Revelation 13 Earth Beast is the one that developed out of the 13 colonies planted by Protestant England, the United States of America. These two horns appear to be lifelong polar opposites, as indicated. They coexist without change during the continuance of the Earth Beast. These two horns demonstrate two equal and opposing powers at the origin of this beast, lamb-like and draconic in speech. The American Continental Congress adopted the Articles of Confederation, the first Constitution of the United States, on November 15, 1777. The present Constitution for the United States was written during the Constitutional Convention. Those that opposed the concentration of power were able to get the Bill of Rights attached to it in an attempt to preserve those enumerated liberties to the people. It was signed on September 17, 1787. F. Tupper Saucy, in his book Rulers of Evil, unquestionably exposes the dragon influence and intrigue present in the establishment of the U.S. Constitution, and more specifically, the concentration of power, Nicolaitan, in the newly created capital of this beast, the sovereign city of the District of Columbia. Though this power was founded upon many godly or lamb-like principles, the draconic influence would eventually turn it to come alongside the draconic power of the sea beast that infected it at its inception. The history of this alliance between these two beasts is that which is foretold in the 13th chapter of the Revelation. 6. He exercises all the power of the first beast before him. It would take two world wars, centered on the dominant locality of the wounded head, to lure this earth beast into its predicted apocalyptic position of help and support for the sea beast. It is not insignificant that about the same time this sea beast receives its deadly head wound, that the earth beast rises in the new world and in time comes to exercise all the powers of the first beast before it, until it finally causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. It is all too evident that America exhibits the dichotomy which the scriptures indicates that it would in the two horns as this earth beast. As the Roman Empire was once the visible police power of the world, so today America, since World War II, has emerged as the police power of the world and exercises all the power of the first beast before him. Despite recently closing hundreds of bases in Iraq and Afghanistan, the United States still maintains nearly 800 military bases in more than 70 countries and territories abroad, from giant little Americas to small radar facilities. Britain, France, and Russia, by contrast, have about 30 foreign bases combined.
Not the